It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, lads and lasses of all ages, welcome to the show. It is Monday, January 26th, 2026, and it is time to get nerdy. Welcome to episode 367 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest gaming podcast in the multiverse. I am Maxion, and I am joined by my friend, my pal, my confidant. You know him as Mr. Lomgaluka, also known as Mr. Nice Guy 425. And for the next hour, we're going to cover topics ranging from gaming news, history, trivia, lawsuits, and everything in between. But Mr. Nice Guy, it's been a couple weeks. How you doing, man?
Dude, I'm doing really, really well. And I would say I had an awesome date night with my wife this weekend. Probably one of the more fun date nights that I've had in a long time.
What'd you do?
We went to go see this little play you might have heard of called Hamilton, which is here in Milwaukee.
Ah.
So that was super fun. We went out and had some Mediterranean food before. And Mac, the guy who I was sitting next to at Hamilton was the PA announcer for a local sports team. I will not say what team. But it's funny because you're sitting there and you're like, I just want to relax. And he wants to, he's talking my ear off. He's very conversational. And I'm a friendly guy. I like to talk to people. And I'm like, he's like, what do you do? I tell him and I'm like, what do you do? He's like, well, I work at such and such place, but also I have a side gig. And I was like, oh, do you sell drugs? And he was like, no, I don't sell drugs. I announced sports for this local sports team. Now, here's the thing that was funny to me about this, Mac.
Yeah.
He kind of dozed off a little bit during the show. And I was like, dude, this is actually way more interesting than the sport that you have to stay awake for hours to do your commentary for.
Mm.
But I didn't say that to him. But it was the type of thing that went through my mind. Good show. Had a blast. Mac, what's new with you?
Excellent. I'm so glad you had a good time at Hamilton. I will forbear from giving my perspective on Hamilton because I...
No, you have to. You don't like Hamilton?
I don't, no.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't think immigrants get the job done, Mac?
Oh, I hate that. No, the thing that I've got problems with, Mr. Nice Guy, the thing that I have issues with, Hamilton wasn't really that guy. There's a reason why there were why there was like a line round the block to shoot Hamilton in duels, because he was not the person that is portrayed there. I mean, most of what you kind of are led to believe about Hamilton is more true about Burr than it is true about Hamilton.
Okay, okay.
Like, Burr was a way more reasonable, a way more honorable person, generally. Hamilton was way more flawed, even than presented. People were lined up around the block to shoot the man, including, but not limited to, for him running his mouth and saying things like, you know, we should really have a king, and I'm kind of the only one qualified. So, president, sure, if it comes with a lifetime appointment and only I get to do it. So, like, you know, I mean, he was not...
They took some liberties. They took some liberties to sell tickets.
They must.
You know, suspension of disbelief.
However,
the
music, like, you know, banger after banger,
yeah.
We were all humming
yeah.
that for years. So, I mean,
yeah, man.
I will say I appreciate the craft. I think it would have been even better and more accurate if it was about Burr, but, you know, that's just me. Anyway, Mr. Nice Guy, I'm glad that you had a lovely time. I want to gush about my new decor just a little bit, though.
Please do.
So I rearranged some things. You may see some stuff. A new one in the back. Somebody, shout out to listener Pocket Dragon for giving me the idea to get my own sort of woven blanket printed up with the Skyrim map behind me. I got it as sort of like a test to see if it would work out, and I'm fairly pleased with how it works on camera. And
looks really good.
I'm actually
really
going to be swapping this one out for something a little bit larger soon to cover the full frame, but that I hopefully will be recognizable. But anyway, yeah, and then, you know, my Poka badges here on the wall, Starfleet flag moved over to the opposite side. So, you know, I'm excited about how it's coming together.
I got to step my game up, dude. I have blurred background right now because I have not, since I moved up to this new office in my house, I have not set up all the posters and the banners and the Marvel stuff. And I got to get that stuff set up, man. You're motivating me. Now, tell me this. What is that on stage left? So you're right. What are we seeing on that red beauty over there?
These are all Poke badges that I made with pearlers. Up at the top, off of frame, is original recipe. You know, Earth badge, Pewter badge, you know.
Nice. Such.
Gen 2 underneath it. I think at the top of the frame, you catch the bottom of the Gen 2 badges, and then it's Gen 4, 5, and so on. I stopped making them once they shifted over to stamps instead of badges. But anyway, so yeah, my Poke badges.
Too many badges, too little time. But you know what we don't have too little time for is to talk about our favorite hobby, which is video games. Yes. And on that note, Mac, I say we do what we do best and we hop right up in that gaming news. What do you think, my friend?
We must, Mr. Nasca. I'm so out of the loop. What's new in video gaming?
Well, there's so much, Mac. And I love the social aspect of video games. And I feel like that's going to be like kind of an overlying theme or underlying theme of today's episode. So let's do it. Episode 367 of Two Nerds in a Pod is a go. Not going to make a 6-7 jokes, kids who are listening, my kids who may be listening after the fact. Mac, this first news story comes from PCGamer.com. And this, to me, is the epitome of the social aspect of gaming, written by Joe Donnelly. Here is what Joe writes. From vampire nightclub owners to proclaimers singing reality TV stardom, pretend journalist bank robberies and genuinely astonishing in-game Shakespeare ensembles, GTA roleplay is no stranger to turning full-blooded virtual violence into imaginative theater production. The latest subculture to capture my imagination, however, is RP Police Academies. The author writes, and did I say who wrote this, by the way? Joe Donnelly? I did say that. Joe Donnelly on PC Gamer. He goes on to say, and I'm clearly not alone, because while player cops and GTA roleplay servers are nothing new, I first happened upon the homemade law serving scene back in 2017. Having spent the last few weeks revisiting some of my favorite servers and dipping my toe into some new ones, there's definitely a bit of a blue line renaissance going on out there on some crime-ridden streets of Los Santos and Blaine County right now. Mac, bottom line, Joe says that there's an influx in players applying to be in these police academies in GTA roleplay, like it's a real police force. The crimes are fake, the paperwork is real, and everyone appears to be having a good time.
The crime is fake, the paperwork is real. I'm shocked that that's what's doing it for folk.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, the creativity never ceases to amaze me. And so my question for you is not even necessarily related to this, but like, of all the games you've played over the years, of all the mods that you've experienced, of all the betas that you've tested, of all the indies that you've kickstarted, what would you say is the most creative community aspect of a game that you've ever seen? It could be something in Pokemon where they brought the servers back. It could be something in Mega Man 2 where people really liked one of the mods in Mega Maker. It could be a third thing. I don't want to put words in your mouth. Coolest community-based experience you've ever seen?
Maybe it's just because it's most recent, but I feel when you're like, oh, the most like community-based whatever has to be the Silk Song subreddit and just silk posting.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Years and years of people tongue-in-cheek claiming that today was the day or tomorrow was the day. And this is how we know. And the sort of over-the-top constant numerology and, you know, Da Vinci Code of it all, with people being like, yes, it will happen. It must happen. It's happening now. It's today. It's everywhere. Look at the connections. All of that I find to be very creative and enjoyable to watch. Obviously, only if, you know, you realize it's all tongue-in-cheek.
Sure.
But, like, that, I will say, is what strikes me in this moment.
I like it.
How about you, dude?
So, the coolest, like, community-driven aspect that I've seen in gaming, and it's interesting because it's not necessarily a game, but it's more of a virtual community. During COVID, or around COVID, there was someone who created a virtual comedy club. in VR. It was called, it is called Failed to Render. And there's actually multiple virtual comedy clubs, but in my mind, this one is the most popular. And he would bring in comedians like myself. We would use our VR headset. We would perform live for an audience of real people using our avatars. And he was paying people to perform in this club. Mm-hmm. And it's something that's still going today. Now, I haven't performed there in a while due to being busy. But to me, that is what video games are all about. Bringing people together, like-minded virtual worlds. I'm a huge fan of Ready Player One. And I feel like this GTA thing, I feel like Failed to Render, I feel like other things that we may discuss later in the show are all getting us closer to that Ready Player One metaverse experience without needing a multi, you know, $10,000, $20,000 rig to do so. I love anything like that that brings people together who are like-minded and promotes positivity. So for me, that's it.
Gotcha. Nice.
Now, Mac, my follow-up question is super quick. Like, the idea of playing a video game and being completely in character. Now, obviously, you've experienced that with Dungeons & Dragons. Mm-hmm. Is there any game or any online experience that you think could bring you into doing that outside of, like, a D&D or a... what's that Steam game where we played?
Oh, Tabletop Sim.
Yeah, yeah. Outside of like a Tabletop Sim, is there any type of community where you think you would ever create an avatar and actually go role play with strangers, with friends? Because you're into that thing, right? You're that type of stuff.
It's true. You'd think I'm the target demographic. But I just, I don't know, Mr. Nice Guy. I have yet to encounter an RP scene that really spoke to me. So nothing comes to mind, but I definitely think it's a possibility. I'm surprised that it hasn't happened for me yet. You know what I mean?
I kind of am too. And I know that you like some RPGs. I know you like Skyrim. There is a game called Fallout 76. I don't think you've ever tried it. I think it's like $8 on sale. I'm just saying, if you ever wanted to get into an MMO where mm-hmm. you could create a character and potentially roleplay, Fallout 76 might be up your alley. Just something to think about.
Okay.
Well, on that note, let's move on to our next news story. Mac, you know I'm a big Donkey Kong fan. Oh, one of my favorite games of all time, Donkey Kong Country 2. So I thought this next story was dope. This is on GameInformer.com, written by Marcus Stewart. Here is what Marcus writes. Out of nowhere, Nintendo has released a significant free update to Donkey Kong Returns HD. Players can now enjoy a new playable character, an additional mode, and a Switch 2 owners reap the benefits of graphical and technical boosts. The update adds Dixie Kong as a new playable character, as in her previous appearances, she can use her ponytail like a helicopter rotor to boost Donkey Kong's jump and glide over longer gaps. Lastly, Mac, it says the DK Returns HD update receives Switch 2 enhancements, including improved visuals and faster load times. It also now supports game share, meaning owners can share the game locally. I believe it also came with a free game mode. Mac, this is not something that we've seen from Nintendo as frequently as we see it from other people, certainly not for free. Mm-hmm. Switch Online does give you access to games. They give you access to updated tracks in Mario Kart 8. My question for you, knowing that Nintendo may go this route more frequently, what Nintendo game would you like to see get an update with additional content? That could be a Switch game. You could even go crazy and pick a game that doesn't have internet access. But what game would you like to see outside of Mega Man 2? I'm gonna veto Mega Man 2.
Let's just veto the whole Mega Man franchise. You know, rein me
fair,
in.
Fair.
Is Mega Man X the same franchise, Mr. Nice Guy? I waited until he took a sip just to do it.
He did. I'll allow it.
I'd love to see some updates to the Mega Man X franchise, frankly. I know that we're expecting a new Mega Man game in the franchise anyway, but that's Capcom. As for actual Nintendo IPs, I would love to see more stuff for Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom. I'd love to see some more updates for those guys.
Yeah, so for me, and this is a game that I feel like it had so much potential, and when I look back on games that got me really, really excited, this is a game that when I knew it was coming, I just absolutely could not wait to play it. And that has not happened a ton of times in my life. That game is GoldenEye Wii. The Wii was not a system that was known for having shooters. And everyone had been waiting for a GoldenEye remake. Many people had been waiting for a remake of GoldenEye for a really long time. So when that came out, it had a really solid community for a while. I know servers are shut down now, but if there was a chance that they could bring that back with some updates, whether it's guns from the original game, whether it's mods from the original game, I think that is a game with an HD update that would sell really, really well. I think that people in their late 30s to mid 40s would probably be super hyped for that, and the new generation too. And I think Nintendo could capitalize on that with a free update. So that's it for me.
Important question for that. Would they keep Odd Job or remove Odd Job?
You know what? I mean, I think they keep him, but Odd Job is like, he's like the nostalgic version of the blue shell in Mario Kart, right?
For sure.
Like, yes, he's in there, but if you can get rid of it and turn it off, you know, you're going to be happy because it's so cheap and silly in my mind. But
okay.
Yeah, I think Odd Job's in there for nostalgia.
I think that's a solid compromise.
Well, Mac, you know what, man? There's a third story about a Mario Kart veteran retiring. A lot of people who have shaped the original games that we played growing up are now older, right? And they are moving on to retirement or other things. So I don't know that there's a whole ton of discussion there. But we do at least want to say shout out to people who created the games that we grew up playing. We appreciate you, and we hope that you enjoy life after making games. And that has been our news for the week.
Do you believe in life after Mario? Well, Mr. Nice Guy, thanks for taking us through a journey of what's going on right now. Why don't we take a little look into the past and do the time warp? Mr. Nice Guy, a whole bunch of excellent titles and things came out this last couple of weeks in years before, and I just want to highlight a couple of the coolest ones. I'll start in 2024 with the release of Pal World for modern stuff. Mr. Nice Guy, I never really got into Pal World. I do have my Poke badges up, so I do like the pocket monsters generally. Did you get into Pal World much, Mr. Nice Guy?
I absolutely never got into Pal World, but the reason I'm making funny faces is because is that retro? Like, is 2 years old retro now? We're doing that?
Well, it's not necessarily retro. It's definitely history. But I'll move on if we're going to.
No, we can talk about Pal World, dude. Like, I think it's definitely an influential thing in gaming because, right, there was a big lawsuit over it. But it is not a game that I played. But I appreciate what they were trying to do with it.
Sure. Yeah, same here. I feel like in a lot of ways, Pal World was the community, or at least people in the community, trying to give the rest of the fans what they had kind of been wanting for. And apparently it was Pokemon with guns. So, yeah. Well, let's go ahead and skip to something maybe a little bit older and a bit more in line with what we usually see, Mr. Nice Guy. Step back to 2005, a release for the GameCube, Resident Evil 4. Obviously, the rest of us would have to wait until 2007 to get this on the PC and the Nintendo Wii, which the Nintendo Wii version is the one that I personally have played of Resident Evil 4. But this certainly for me marks a change in the vibe of the genre, where we go from survival horror to survival action. And in my opinion, kind of where I felt like Resident Evil started to really shine for me personally. The first three titles definitely have a place in my heart, but I really started to enjoy Resident Evil when I could, you know, play it with a friend, Resident Evil 5. That's when I really, really started to like it and see what it could be. And I know that probably makes me crazy in the eyes of some Resident Evil fans, but I'll take it. Step a little bit farther back, 2003, Panzer Dragoon Orta on the original Xbox. Love it, love it. I've talked about it before. But I want to step a little bit farther back, even to 1990, a title that I think's definitely a hidden gem for the NES called The Magic of Scheherazade. Nice Guy, have you heard of this guy before?
That's not. And as someone, I have not, I should say. And that's as someone who plays and collects to a certain extent NES games, I'm excited to hear more about this because there's a lot of them. What genre? What's the objective? Tell me more, Mac.
Sure, sure. So imagine, if you will, that someone made a mashup of Legend of Zelda and Final Fantasy with a couple heaping tablespoons of time travel.
Okay.
So the main character in the game is the descendant of a legendary hero. The baddie kidnaps a bunch of people, including your fiancé, the Princess Scheherazade.
Unique.
And you lose the fight with this guy, right? So, like, you know, you try and save your fiancé, bam, you lose. And as part of losing, the baddie, like, steals your memory.
What?
And then you get a fairy companion. You know, maybe a little bit like other...
You're making this up.
No, I'm not. This is 100%. This is 1990. The fairy companion helps you get you, like, back in track, and then you bounce back and forth through time to solve puzzles, gather magic, allies, and defeat the wizards. So, like, what's interesting is that in this 1990 game, we have a lot of what I think are very identifiable, you know, concepts.
Sure.
Things that we would see in later, especially Legend of Zelda games. Oracle of Ages certainly had that back and forth time
sure,
bit.
Some time travel.
And I'm not saying this to be like, oh, you know, they copied Magic of Scheherazade. I mean, you know, you get ideas where you get ideas. But it is definitely an interesting game. It has great music, great visuals, and excellent implementation. And I think particularly when you consider it within the context of its time, what they were working with, I think it is a hidden gem in the truest sense. You know, something you probably haven't heard about, but something that's worth playing. And if you happen to be one of those lucky gamers who has an emulation as an option, I think this is something you oughta put on your shortlist to give it a try. Is it Samson, Little Samson? No, but, you know, hard to top that. But it is quite good, and I think you'd enjoy it very much.
For those keeping track at home, $21.87 loose on price charting.
Nice.
So not in the realm of being, like, unobtainable, but may not be the easiest to find. I don't think I've ever seen this game at a retro game store. Cool, Mac. Thanks for putting me out of this.
Hey, if you can find it, great. Otherwise, we know how to do it. but that was the last of what I had. Just a few little things. As you know, Mr. Dice Guy, the beginning, start of the year is always a little bit difficult with respect to, like, what was released this week, because everybody wanted to get it out before the holidays.
Yep.
And it's only lately in, you know, the advent and implementation of digital purchasing, so a lot of newer things, that we have people making releases even in even in January. So a little bit lean, but that doesn't mean that these weren't bangers.
I get it, man. Dude, you're making me want to go. And in fact, I actually have to go somewhere this weekend for a short trip. You're making me want to hit some retro game stores.
Yeah, do it.
And try to find this game. I mostly collect for Analog Pocket at this point because I love that thing. But yeah, I may have to get some new NES stuff. Well, Mac, thank you for that. And now it is time for our topic of the week, a topic that I'm, like, ridiculously excited to talk about, because I think that we may have very, very different views on this. It's going to be a fun discussion. If you're here live, let us know what you think about this. Here is the story. And by the way, this is a segment where we talk about something relevant in gaming and give our opinions on it. By B. Wertheimer, here is the title on Kotaku.com, Replacing Your Gamer Friends with AI Chatbots. Sounds terrifyingly effective. Here's what they write. You are not immune to AI psychosis. Much like cult indoctrination, it can happen to anyone given the right circumstances. Take Matthew Galt, games and tech writer at 404 Media. After failing to convince his friends to play Escape from Tarkov with him, Galt thought it would be funny to replace his buddies with an AI chatbot. It ended up not being very funny at all. Galt is a self-described certified AI hater, though he concedes that LLM technology is useful in certain instances. And I'm going to ignore the aside there. But it says, Galt's friends were turned off by the difficulty of Escape for Tarkov, an extraction shooter, which came out of early access last November. He described playing by himself as lonely. Quote, then I saw comic artist Zach Weinershoff making fun of a service, Questy.ai, that sells AI avatars that'll hang out with you while you play video games, he writes. What started as a joke quickly became more sincere. Galt found he genuinely enjoyed playing Tarkov with his Quest.ai companion. Wolf. It was, I thought, not unlike playing with a real friend who has more than 1,000 hours in the game and knows more than you. Wolf bantered, referenced community in jokes, and it made me laugh. We're going to stop there.
Mm.
AI to serve the purpose of being a companion to play a game with you and have conversation with you when, for whatever reason, you don't have anyone else to play with you. It could be a skill thing. It could be a social thing. You can use your imagination. Thoughts on this idea?
Touch grass on occasion. Look, I know that was very cruel, and I apologize. But again, you're Mr. Nice Guy, so I don't have to. So I don't have to be. But no, I feel very much like there are a lot of things that I would not, even if it were easy, convenient, or helpful, that I would not seek to get an AI chatbot to hang out with me doing. And video gaming's definitely one of those. I don't know. Maybe I'm just an AI hater. Probably am. But that seems a little silly to me.
Okay.
I can understand how it fills a need for him particularly in this instance. And I hope that it has increased his enjoyment of the art. Personally, be like, if people were like, hey, the game you want to us all to play with you is too hard, you know, I'd be like, okay, let's play something else.
Yeah, I guess. So, I mean, I guess here's the thing. Like, here's the real world example, Mac.
Yeah.
And let's not say that it's about difficulty. Let's say it's more about scheduling.
Mm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, we used to have a really, really dope group of people that we played GURPS with, like, every week during COVID, right?
Uh-huh. Yes, indeed.
And scheduling makes it harder. You know, post-COVID, lives, kids, things going on, work. Like, if that was it, like, if it wasn't something that's less relatable to you, like Escape for Tarkov, where the barrier to entry is skill,
mm-hmm.
Because it's such a hard game, and there's such a maybe not inclusive community in terms of skill set. Like, they want people who are good, and maybe they're mean if you're not, and it's ruthless, and you're killing people and trying to extract. If it's something like D&D, where it's just a scheduling issue, would you feel differently about chatbots or AI companions?
Actually, yes, really? I would feel differently, but even more so in the negatory.
Really?
Yeah, because for me, the whole point of the exercise is less about the escape. That's nice, but it's even more about the community aspect.
Okay.
And that is, you know, for all the good that I'm sure having chatbots to synthesize or to evoke the feeling of community, I get so much more out of it. A good example, as you know, we teach that class at the library for the kids.
Sure.
You know, I feel like I relate better to the youths than I did previous. And that's not something I could get in other words. Not just relating to them specifically one-on-one, but also to them as a group. I don't know if I think I'm starting to ramble here, but I'll just revert back to the beginning and say that I think the community is primarily the point. And I don't think we could or should try and replicate that sans the people.
Okay, fair enough. And I'm going to disagree. Like, I get what you're saying, right? I think that there's a lot of benefits to this. I think that especially where there's a barrier to entry that is skill-based. Mm-hmm. I think that the chat bot, and it's not like the chat bot is playing games with him. It's more just keeping him company, but it is talking about the game and making references. I don't know. This is me hypothesizing. Maybe it's even giving advice, and it's simply making the experience more fun.
Now hold on, Mr. Nice Guy. I just have to interrupt. Are we entirely sure that Galvatron here in the chat with us, who, as we are doing this live with each other, is participating and talking about offending Jake Gyllenhaal and the like, are we entirely sure that he's not a chatbot?
We're not entirely sure because he's never told us anything.
Yeah.
He's never told us anything about who he is. And I'm totally fine with that.
I think that gets at, like, there were times where, like, I have played games and wanted, like, people to hang out with. And honestly, I find that streaming does a pretty good job of, you know, having people to chat with while you're doing things. I mean, I know I'm going out of my way to try and find every way to be like, no, not AI.
But I feel
bad for this guy. And I hope that he finds like some more community because it's kind of
well, a lot of us desperately need. In his defense, he goes on. I mean, he has friends, right?
Yeah, he definitely has friends.
His friends just didn't want to play this game. But he goes on to say, you know, and we should say this. He says, I never thought anything like AI psychosis could happen to me. Now, I'm not so sure. I didn't understand how easy it might be to lose yourself to AI delusion until I'd messed around with Wolf. Even with its crappy auto-tune sounding voice, Wolf was good enough to hang out with. But he also says that he probably won't use AI in the future for this purpose. So Mac, like, in terms of tutorial... Mm-hmm. Right? I feel like AI could help with the barrier to entry, and candidly, it already does. Because when you're playing games with bots, there is AI there. When you're playing games with Navi or some type of companion in The Legend of Zelda, that is AI. When you're playing Counter-Strike Source or a game where there may not be other humans and you just want to practice, or a Call of Duty, or any game that is skill-based and PvP, there's often an option for you to play against AI. So this is a step further than that, but it's not like this is something that gamers have not already embraced in the past without issue.
You know,
so that's why I don't have a problem with this.
You know, I will say just that I'm big Luddite that I am. We do call this AI, right? And we even call the old robots in Left 4 Dead and Left 4 Dead 2 our teammates,
yes.
You know,
yes.
We call that AI.
Yes.
It's worth noting that neither those are actually the sci-fi notion of AI, nor are the large language models that we now are calling AI, nor are those things AI either. And while it's kind of like, potato, tomato, or sure, we called those two-wheeled auto-balancing scooters hoverboards, and they're not really hoverboards, but they're the closest we're going to get. I will say that I, because I'm a Luddite, do still find a fundamental distinction between five layers of if-then statements as my, you know, AI teammates, and 20 levels of if-then statements cobbled together with libraries the size of the Library of Alexandretta, AI as well. But it's worth always saying that fundamentally, that even the best AI things we have today can't really synthesize information in the way that, like, a sci-fi AI is supposedly going to be able to. And we're supposed to have someday. I know, just a bee in my bonnet. We've only got an hour and I'm sucking it all up with my rants.
With your anti-AI, which, here's the thing. Dude, I get what you're saying. I totally do. I mentioned earlier, I'm a huge fan of Ready Player One.
Oh, yeah.
Of the book and the movie, more so the book. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan of the idea that in 10 years, 5 years, 8 years, whatever it is, 20 years, that there could be a very, very real metaverse. And not that we'd want to be in there all the time, but that much like that comedy club that someone created virtually, that there already are spaces where we can hang out virtually with our avatars and have a good time. And they're getting more and more haptic feedback so that you can feel bullet shots and you can feel punches and you can really, really experience the world. And I don't think that that world progresses quickly enough without the use of AI. Like, number one, the idea of it being fully populated by humans, I think, is just maybe not feasible. Number two, I think that the ability that AI has to much more quickly than a human artist can design a virtual world, AI can design a virtual world much, much faster, right? And we've seen that in games where, I forget the term because I'm on the spot now, where worlds are like procedurally generated. That's the word I'm looking for. So I like the idea of AI in helping us progress faster in the world of gaming. And I really don't have a problem with this guy using a chatbot. It's not hurting anyone. It's not helping him cheat. It's not giving him an unfair advantage. It's giving him some companionship that is fun for him, and he knows it's fake.
Well, I hope that it turns out well for him.
I do too. And that has been our news for the week, or our topic of the week, rather.
All right. Well, now we're going to turn to a crowdfunding project that's trying to get off of the ground. Mr. Nice Guy, we had a bunch of different options. At first, I was 100% sure I was going to go one way. And then I was like, oh no, this one's here. And it's so obviously a scam. And I want to talk about that. But, Nice Guy, I did land on a Kickstarter project that I actually think is something we might enjoy talking about. And so,
okay,
the scams out the window. Do not back Crown City, just FYI. We're going to talk actually about a Kickstarter for a game called Hannah. So this is an isometric turn-based tactical MMORPG. Now, they were looking for roughly $30,000 to bring the project to life, which they did pop over that limit just, I believe, earlier today. So when I put it on here to write about and to talk about, I was just like, oh, this will be great. We'll be, and then over the line. So, but they are looking for a full launch of the game in 2 years, in January 2027. This is a team out of France that it's putting it together, and they have a playtest, an open playtest that's going on from January 10th, a couple weeks back, all the way until February 9th, which is a couple days after the Kickstarter closes.
So real quick, so January 2027, so 1 year out, not two.
Oh my gosh, yep, I'm so sorry.
Okay, just making sure.
Thank you, Lom, thank you, because it's 2026. yes,
all good.
So 2027, so 1 year away. Let's see. Now, also, if you are the type of person who likes having alpha access to games that you've kickstarted, this does have a reward tier that gets you into that. Although, if you're just the type of person that wants, access generally, $30 is the sort of base tier to get access. $90 if you want that alpha access, which I'm not 100% sure how the finances are specifically going to work, but we'll get back to that. MMORPG, it will be a game as a service, so you will be paying out for every month of this MMORPG. How much that is, I assume it'll be the $30 for whatever. Even on their tiers, their rewards, they list one, you know, it'll be like, oh, this gets you 1 month subscription to the game. I hope that they are not intending on charging $90 every month for alpha access. That would be crazy. Hopefully it's like a one-time payment of $90 gets you the whole alpha access and then a month subscription, or gets you in so that you can then pay whatever price for the, you know, monthly. Again, that's not exactly something that's elaborated on, so I'm just taking a flyer. And it's definitely a game that has some type of in-game currency, because they offer you 1,000 nectars on launch for backing. Anyway.
How much did you say this cost per month?
I don't know. The starter pack, the sort of, you know, lowest tier that actually comes with a one-month subscription to the MMORPG, is the $30 tier. That gives you 1,000 nectars and 1 month subscription. Whereas, you know, the 90, or sorry, the $100, it's not 90, it's 90 euros, 100 and change dollars, gives you, you know, the couple of starter things and 3,000 nectars and so on.
Got it.
Yeah, it is a little bit interesting as a prospect, you know, this whole using Kickstarter to fund an MMORPG, Kickstarter as a vehicle for a game as service development, is something that I don't think we see all that often, which is why it's a little oddly constructed, but yeah, Mr. Nice Guy, that is Hannah. I have some thoughts, but I am curious about if you've got any sort of off the top of the dome things that jump out at you.
Yeah, man, off the top of the dome, you kind of alluded to this a little bit. MMOs rise and fall with the strength of the community, with the ability to have an initial community at launch, but also the ability of the developers to keep the interest of that community over a long enough period of time so that at some point it starts to snowball. And that's why World of Warcraft is still here, right? That's why every successful MMO is still here, because you had an initial fan base that probably came from something you did in the past, right? But then over time, you gave them something that was addicting enough that they wanted to keep playing it, and that over years, more and more people started to play. This, to me, doesn't have that hook. If I was to ask them, like, what makes this game better than Diablo 4? It'd be tough for them to answer that question. $30 for a month subscription and rubies or whatever that currency is wild to me. And 114 backers with 12 days to go. I mean, yes, they've met their goal, but the community to me is just not strong enough based on these numbers for this to be a successful thing. Even though it looks beautiful.
It does look beautiful. I like the mock-ups. I kind of wish I was a bit more into MMORPGs so I could, you know, dive in and give a more robust view on it. I will say, generally, I think, obviously we wish them nothing but the best, but I do think Kickstarter as a vehicle for games as a service development, I don't think is an especially good fit. Just because the game as a service needing constant, you know, monetary input and cash flow, whereas Kickstarter is really a platform made and designed for a one-time infusion to make something happen. I just, you know, wish them the best of luck. I'm sure that on their side, the numbers work. But yeah, I'll be keeping my eyes on it. But for me, I would have to say Kick, because I just don't think they can get across the line.
I gotta ask you a question, man. So this is a turn-based MMO, which is not something I've heard of before, but I think it's a very, very cool idea. The idea of being able to be in a party with friends and having it be like, all right, my turn to attack. Okay, now your turn to attack. But also, like, coordinating. Somehow is very, very cool. It's much like D&D or GURPS, right? Like,
sure,
it's literally like that. Mac, what do you think they do if you're playing the game but you don't have a full party?
Well, that's the thing. They do say that it's designed so that you can either play solo or you can play with friends in your group. Doing either PvP or PvE. I assume they'll probably have a thing to be like, oh, how do you want to play today? Alone or with people? You know what I mean?
So if you're playing solo, are you still in a party or is it just you? I'm just curious.
I believe it's just you if you're playing solo.
I was being a jerk. I was going to say, oh, wait, you mean to believe they use AI to fill the party?
Oh, I absolutely believe they would use AI and they would use bots to fill the party for sure.
Yeah, it's such a common thing.
Yeah. Anyway, I think Kick it for me. Obviously, wish them the best.
Yeah, I say Kick as well for the reasons that I've already said. Good luck, though.
Yep, good luck. And that's been Kick or Kickstart.
Awesome. So, it is time for Nerdflex. A segment where you, the viewers, try to stump the host. Sometimes you do, sometimes you do not. And Mac, what's going on this week? We got something special?
Indeed we do. Mr. Nice Guy, it's a sound test episode, and that means we're saying goodbye to an old one and hello to a new one. Specifically, today we're going to say goodbye to the mystery sound from episode 327 and welcome a new one for this episode 367. But Mr. Nice Guy, do you want to take a final crack at the mystery sound from 327 and see?
Yeah, I sure do. So let me press play here and see what it sounds like. Ooh, that's tough, man. It sounds something like something royal, something triumphant. Man, I don't know why, but the first game that came to my mind was Dungeon Defenders.
Ooh.
When I heard that, and I don't know why, but like almost if you complete a wave.
You know, I know what you're talking about, and there is a similar sound in Dungeon Defenders. This is not it, but like I see exactly where you're coming from.
But anyway, that was what my guess was going to be. What is it actually?
Is when you rescue a hero in Warcraft 2.
Ah, okay. Well, do we need to play the new sound as well?
We do indeed.
I don't know what this is from.
All right.
It sounded like a game that was recently on sale on my Steam wishlist. It made me think of it, which is Cult of the Lamb. Because it sounded kind of like a lamb, sort of, or a goat or something. So I'm going to go with Cult of the Lamb. I don't know.
Well, unfortunately not, Mr. Nest Guy. A swing and a miss, but that's okay because that means that the mystery is still open to all of you. If you know, let us know on social media. Remember to reference this episode, episode 367, and you could have a handcrafted prize headed to your door.
Well, Mac, by the way, if y'all are here live and you have multiple choice questions, put them in the chat, and Mac will let us know if any of those come in. In the short term, we have some test bank questions. Here's the first one, Mac, Nintendo question. This is an interesting one I do not know the answer to. What console makes a Mario coin collect noise when turned on? What console makes a Mario coin collect noise when turned on?
Well, I guess we can assume that it's a Nintendo console.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's not anything before N64, because I'd remember that.
Oh, wait. It's the Game Boy. Ba-ding.
Yeah, when the sound comes down. Or the symbol comes
down. Yeah.
Is that the... Okay.
I mean, I'm pretty sure.
But if you turn it on without a game in there, it wouldn't do that. But yeah, fair enough. I think that that's probably the answer. We won't be too nitpicky here. Game Boy, final answer. It is indeed the Game Boy. Well done, Mac. Well done. That's funny, because I wouldn't have thought about that. That's super interesting.
Oh, no. Nice guy. It would have taken you like half a second longer.
Yeah, probably would have got it eventually, especially being a big lover of the analog pocket. All right, let's pull up our next question of the day. Ooh, interesting. Another Nintendo question. It's a Zelda question. In what year was the first game released? In what year was the first Zelda game released? Now, are we sure that it's Zelda on NES is the first one, or is there some trick Zelda that we don't know about?
No, I'm pretty sure it's Zelda on the NES. I'm going to say somewhere in 86 or maybe 87.
I'm pretty sure it's either 87 or 89.
Okay.
Mario was 85. I'm going to go... I feel like Zelda wasn't as late as 89. That would have been too late. So I feel like it was 80... I think it's 87.
Okay, I'm going to stick with 86 as my guess. I'm sure you'll be right.
Watch it be 88. Watch it be 88. All right, let's see what it is. Dude, you are right. It's 86.
Hey, well done. Broken clock twice a day. But that doesn't mean we should consult the broken clock for time. Bad at it. Nice guy. We have a question in the chat from Galvatron.
Let's do it.
Who asks, who is the main protagonist of Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain? Is it A, Solid Snake, B, Liquid Snake, C, Punished Venom Snake, D, Big Boss, C, or E, Naked Snake, or F, The Boss? So, Solid Snake, Liquid Snake, Punished Venom Snake, Big Boss, Naked Snake, or The Boss.
A lot of those are just silly options, but that's super funny. What are you thinking, Mac? I've played a little bit of Metal Gear Solid 5. I don't think that it's Big Boss.
Yeah, so I played the first Metal Gear Solid, and I think I played a few minutes of the second Metal Gear Solid. But, yeah, if it's not Solid Snake, is it not Solid Snake?
It might be. That just seems... Oh, Solid Snake?
I know that in the like lore that like there's connections between Solid Snake and Big Boss and there's clones and all sorts of nonsense going on. But like, I mean, the only character I know is Solid Snake.
Let's just go with... Big Boss is often the protagonist as well. Let's go with Solid Snake.
All right. Solid Snake, final answer. Galvatron, let us know. Interesting. Punished Venom Snake. He has no connection to the snakes. He just happens to look exactly like them. I'm going to trust you on Love that. It. As ridiculous as it sounds, Galvatron.
Yeah, he might be making that up. Awesome. Well, hey, thanks for playing, y'all. That has been Nerdflex.
All right. Well, now we turn to a little bit of legalese.
Legalese.
Mr. Nice Guy, in honor of 2 years since Pal World, I wanted to do just a quick little update on what's been going on with Nintendo V Pocket Pair.
Yes.
With a brief little summary. So in September 2024, Nintendo sues, claiming that Pal World, or that Pocket Pair's game Pal World, is using its patented technology. And for the first 3 months or so, we didn't know which patents were at issue at all until Pocket Pair shared that information publicly. And what they shared was 3 patents that were about, capturing items that can catch characters encountered in a virtual space. The second patent,
silly,
an aiming capture items patent. Also, I think silly. And the third one, the writable characters patent. Now, obviously, I think we can all have a healthy back and forth about whether or not these as concepts should be reserved to but a single person for, or a single company for use in games unless we pay money or what have you. Seems like it might hurt the art form a bit, but we can have that elsewhere. This is just meant to be a, you know, an overview. Now,
right, in
the U.S., however, and those patents were all filed after Pocket Pair had launched Pal World, but those patents were all linked to patents that were filed earlier. So there is this sort of, we already put our quarter down at the procedure at the patent office, where you can basically be like, hey, we're patenting, whew, that's a tongue twister, these things that existed in our video game or in our software. And even though we're applying for these patents now, farther down the road, they relate to the patents we already received previously. So, Nice Guy, you may pioneer 5 or 6 whole different things in your video game and patent one, and then patent a few others later on down the road. And that's an allowance that patent offices abroad and here domestically
allow.
Yeah, that's something they allow. Now, over in the U.S., however, while we would extend a sort of courtesy enforcement, to patents, sometime in late 2024, Nintendo officially filed 23 patents in the U.S., 23 patents that they claimed Pal World was infringing on. Once again, you know, after the, we can't go there though. In February of 2025, though, the U.S. Patent Office rejected 22 of those 23 patents for the usual reasons. Either they were not novel, or not patentable as concepts. And then in October of last year, the head of the U.S. Patent Office decided that there was going to be an in-depth review of the recent patent activities of Nintendo, possibly, it's speculated, as a result of all the public attention on the patenting, the methods of patenting, and what Nintendo has been patenting, especially once there was the, oh, Nintendo is patenting or trying to patent the concept of summonable characters. I did a short dive on previous episodes on how that was not nearly as broad as some YouTube commenters were making it out to be, but that it was still fair to say that maybe it shouldn't have been granted. Reasonable minds can differ. As ever, this is a case that is going onward, and it has not ended yet. We have no firm conclusions yet, but for the time being, to honor Pal World's second birthday, it's almost ready to walk, take those tentative steps, and yet it's already been involved in so many patent litigations. It's only fair to celebrate Pal World's second birthday by talking about how far we've come already. And that's what I had for legalese today, Mr. Nice Guy.
Love it, love it, love it. Shout out to Pal World.
Yeah.
Challenging.
Indeed.
The big boss, as they say. Well, Mac, thank you. And everybody, thank you for tuning in to episode 367 of Two Nerds in a Pod, nerdiest podcast in the galaxy. Before we go, we have one last segment called What We've Been Watching and What We've Been Playing, where we talk about just that, the cool, nerdy stuff we've been into across all platforms. And if you're here live, you got a job to do. Let us know what you've been watching and playing. We're always looking for more nerdy stuff. Mac, what you've been watching and playing, buddy?
Well, I just recently finished off a Miyazaki film that I was excited about because I figured it was based on Ursula K. Le Guin's Earthsea Chronicles. So I watched Tales of Earthsea, and it's a thing, and it took people and effort and time and vision and energy, and I am glad that it exists as a piece of art. It is not what I was expecting, and it was almost, but not quite, entirely unlike the books. So lost in adaptation, I guess we'll have to call it. But still an enjoyable time, and I don't regret it or want the time back. But FYI, if you're trying to watch that Miyazaki film, it does not bear really much of any connection to the to Ursula K. Le Guin's books. So just fair warning. Another thing I was watching, The Wheel of Time season 3. Finished that off. It was its final season, which is a bit of a shame. There were some things I really, really liked about the adaptation and some things that I was like, could have done without.
And that's a book adaptation, correct? Yeah.
Oh, yes, indeed. The Wheel of Time spans, I think, 14 books, if I remember.
Yeah.
I managed to read the first 9 or 10 while they were in publication, but kind of fell off, near the end there. But yeah, that's what I've been watching. What I've been playing, though, has been Mega Man X Legacy Collection, the first. So that's X 1 through 4, and I've just been going back to get some of the achievements after having beaten all those first 4 Mega Man X games and having a great time with one of your favorite series. How about you, Mr. Nice Guy? What have you been up to?
Love it, love it, love it. Wait, as far as watching goes, rewatching Stranger Things, right, with the family.
Okay.
We've really been, not with all of them, not with the whole family, but those that are old enough to watch Stranger Things, we've been watching it, and it's been super fun. What else have I been watching, man? I can't even remember. I started Fallout again when it first came out. This isn't for me. But started Fallout Season 1 again to get caught up with that. In terms of playing, lots of time with the Analog Pocket, Mac.
Nice.
In its simplicity, it's brilliant in its simplicity. And I think I have more fun with that handheld than any other. So playing some old school Mario Land, playing some Contra, and actually playing a little bit of Mega Man X on there as well. So having fun with that. In terms of new stuff, Arc Raiders, Black Ops 7, all that type of stuff. And I think that's pretty much it, Mac. What are people talking about? Oh, by the way, I got to say one other thing real quick. Also been reading a ton, and that's probably why I haven't been gaming as much. So finished Red Rising. By Pierce Brown. Great, great book. Started Golden Sun, the second book in the series, and having an absolute blast with it. Requested from a family member to get the third book. So should be getting that shortly. And then also Mac reading Well of Ascension in the Cosmere by Brandon Sanderson.
Nice.
What are people into in the chat?
Well, a little quiet today, but Galvatron does have some suggestions. He's been watching Blood of Zeus Season 2, Fallout Season 2, Splinter Cell Death Watch, and Arcane Season 2. A lot of Season 2s in there. As for playing, Ninja Gaiden Ragebound, Shinobi Art of Vengeance, Red Dead Redemption HD, still brilliant, and Metal Gear Solid Delta, Mortal Kombat 1, Elder Scrolls Oblivion Remastered as well. Well,
Mac, did you pick that up?
I did not, sadly.
Me neither, but it looks awesome.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, Mac, why don't you take us home, man?
Absolutely. Thank you, everyone, for coming out to the show, for being a part of episode 367. This show only as good as the people listening to it. And Mr. Nice Guy, of course. We appreciate you being here, whether you're here live or on twitch.tv/twonerdsinapod on Monday evenings, 9 p.m. Central to 7 p.m. Pacific, or if you're listening after the fact when this shows up on your podcast platform feeds on usually Wednesday mornings. We appreciate you. Be good to each other. Be excellent. Stay safe. Have fun. You're the best, and keep it nerdy.
Deuces.
Bye.